You're an important part of the Grace to You family. Hi, this is John MacArthur. Thanks for following along today by podcast or audio stream. Be sure to take advantage of the 3,000 full-length sermon downloads available free at gty.org. Now, today's edition of Grace to You.
Our world and everything in it is subject to God's all-powerful hand. With that in mind, stay here for an eye-opening look at the power Jesus displayed 2,000 years ago and what it means for you today on Grace to You. We've harnessed the mightiest rivers, split the tiniest particles, and from that, lit up entire cities. But what about the kind of power that keeps the planets aligned and turns death into life? Obviously, only God has that kind of ultimate, complete control, and nowhere is that authority more clearly seen than in the power, the amazing power of Jesus. That's the title of John MacArthur's study that he launches today on Grace to You. John, when we think of powerful people, we tend to think of charisma or influence, the ability to lead or control others. Is that the kind of power that we should have in mind as we talk about the amazing power of Jesus?
Well, certainly he had that power to control people, as indicated by the fact that he went into the temple at Passover, where he began his ministry, and threw out tens of thousands of people and all the buyers and sellers and all the animals. And he did it in the face of the religious establishment, who would have, I assume, tried to stop him. And there were at least 300 regular temple police. He did the same thing at the end of his ministry again at the final Passover of his life. So there's no question that he had the ability to lead and control other people. But when we're talking about the power of Jesus in particular in this series, we're talking about miracle power. What we're talking about is evidence that he is God because he can create. We're not talking about merely influence over people externally. We're talking about the ability to alter organs, to change limbs, to give sight, to give hearing to deaf people, to immediately remove paralysis and give such complete ability back to a paralyzed person that he can walk instantly without any rehabilitation. That's what we're talking about. Power over the natural world, power over the supernatural world, over demons, power over sin, to forgive sin, power over disease, power over death, all of that. And Jesus exhibited this power because it proved to any honest mind that he was God, because he was doing things and doing them on a daily basis for a period of 3 years that no one could ever do. You want to stay with us for the next few weeks and enjoy what you're going to learn about his power.
Even if you're very familiar with the Bible records about Jesus' miracles, this study just may sharpen your understanding of why he did them. With that said, here's John MacArthur now to look at the amazing power of Jesus.
Take your Bible, if you will, and prepare to look with me at Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8. The 8th chapter through the 12th chapter is really in many ways critical to the understanding of the life of Christ and the message of Matthew. For in this section, Matthew records a series of miracles performed by Jesus Christ. There are countless thousands of miracles that are done, nine of which he singles out as examples of the power of Jesus Christ. They are really his credentials as the Messiah. They are those signs which point convincingly to his deity, for only God can do the things that he does. The sad part is that after the miracles in chapters 8 and 9, after the preaching that occurs following that, the Jews conclude in chapter 12 that Jesus is of the devil. That was their conclusion. So in many ways, this becomes the heart of Matthew's message. Christ does everything possible to manifest his deity, and they conclude exactly the opposite. And then in chapter 13, he turns from the Jews toward the establishment of a Gentile church. This is a monumental section of Scripture. Now, you'll notice that it begins with three miracles. The miracle of healing the leper in the first four verses, healing the man with paralysis, verses 5 to 13, and the woman with fever in verses 14 and 15. This is the opening triad of miracles. There are nine miracles in these two chapters. They come in three sections of three. Three miracles, then a response. Three miracles, then a response. Three miracles, then a response. All designed to manifest the deity of Jesus Christ. Miracles, you see, were God's way of attesting to the deity of his Son. They are creative miracles. They manifest power that is only defined by the essence of God. They are things that man could never do. They are supernatural. Now let's look, first of all, at the beginning. The first three miracles. And I want to give you some general thoughts about them. There are three. The healing of one with leprosy. The healing of one, it says, has the palsy. That's paralysis. And it could have been caused by many things. And then one of a woman with a fever. Those three. And there are several key things to note about these first three miracles. Number one, they begin at the lowest level of human need. The physical. Life is more than physical, yes, but Jesus is also sympathetic about the physical. It's wonderful that the miracles of Jesus were not only miracles that dealt with spiritual things, or that dealt with comfort or riches, or circumstances, or providence, but that they touched man at the lowest level of need, the physical. He goes to the depths of human disease. Later on, in the second set of miracles, he deals more with the spiritual. And in the third set of miracles, he even touches on the ultimate enemy of man, death itself, as he raises the dead. But in this point, he's dealing with that low level of human need, which shows us not only the power of Christ, but the sympathy of Christ. Second thing that I see in just kind of an overview is that he responds in all three cases to appeals. To appeals. This shows us his compassion. In the first case, the leper says to him, if you will, you can make me clean. In the second case, the friends of the centurion say, the servant is in the house sick of paralysis. And he says, I'll come. In the third case, according to what Luke adds in the parallel passage, the friends of the family of Peter say to Jesus, you know, his mother-in-law is sick and sure would be wonderful if you could go over there and take care of her. In all three cases, he responds to the appeal of the heart of people. The third thing to note in these three miracles is in every case he acts on his own will. Though he is sympathetic and though he is at the same time deeply compassionate, he is also sovereign. And that is an important thing. In each case, he acts on his own volition. I will be thou clean. I will come down and heal him. He reached his hand and touched her and the fever left. And fourthly, and this is beautiful, in each of these miracles, he touches someone who, in the terms of the understanding of the Pharisees and the Jews, was at the lowest level of human existence. First, a leper, the scum of the earth. Second, a Gentile. And third, a woman. In just that alone, there is a subtlety here that devastates the Jewish pride, the Pharisees' pride. And you see where Jesus really puts his emphasis. On the humble and the meek and the outcast. Do you know that the first person he ever revealed his messiahship to was a harlot in Samaria who wasn't even a Jew? That says something to the Jewish society of his day. So from the very start, he makes it clear that he is going to establish his authority by miracle power. But he's also going to show his sympathy for those who are hurting at the lowest level of human need. He is compassionately going to respond to the cries of their friends and those who have those needs. And yet he is going to act sovereignly as the Lord that he is. And the sad thing, the thing that just breaks your heart, is that with all of this, they turn their backs on him. And they conclude in chapter 12 that what he does by the power of Beelzebub, the prince of demons. They hated him. In fact, they had to kill him because he upset their religious security. In this section, his power is awesome, people. It's awesome. He cleanses a leper, heals a servant, raises up a woman, controls the sea, casts out demons, makes the blind to see, makes crippled people walk, makes dumb people speak, heals every single sickness that's brought to him. An incredible display of power. And if you look backwards in Matthew and go back and start at the beginning, you can see that this is just one more great category of affirmation of the Messiahship of Christ. First chapter, genealogy. That attested to the legal qualifications of the Messiah. Second chapter, birth, and all of the fulfillment of prophecy attested to the prophetic qualifications of the Messiah. And then you come to his baptism, attested to the divine approval of his Messiahship. Then you come to the temptation, attested to his spiritual qualifications to be the Messiah. Then you come to the sermon, his theological qualifications. And now you come to the miracles, the most essential qualification of all, the proof that he is God. He's God. By the way, chapter 8 begins where chapter 4 left off. The sermon is stuck in the middle. Verse 23. And Jesus went all about Galilee, teaching in the synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all the sick people that were taken with diverse diseases and torments, and those who were possessed with demons, those who were epileptic, those who had paralysis, and he healed them. And there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee and Decapolis and Jerusalem and Judea and beyond the Jordan. You see, this is right where he left off, isn't it? He went up in a mountain, preached a sermon, came down, and started it all over again. Thousands, uncounted numbers of healings. And he healed all who came to him. And the first three we've kind of introduced to you. We're just going to look at the first one. Beautiful, beautiful story. Let me read it to you. Verses 1-4. Just a short one. When he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus saith unto him, see thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. That's it. At first thought, you say, well, isn't that nice? It's a wonderful little story. Let me see if I can take you deep enough in it to see what it's really saying. Verse 1. When he was come down from the mountain. What mountain? Well, the mountain where he had just been teaching the sermon. Near the village of Capernaum. Great multitudes followed him. Why? You want to know something? It wasn't because they loved him. It wasn't because they adored him. It wasn't because they believed in him. It was because they were curious, first of all. Because they'd never heard anybody speak with such authority. And they had never seen anybody who could go around healing people. He attracted a huge crowd. And they came down the mountain after him. And they're all ready to see what happens. And it happens in verse 2. And behold, there came, or literally in the Greek there, approached. And that's kind of an interesting word. There approached a leper. Now what's interesting is lepers don't approach. This one did. Do you know anything about leprosy or what a leper is in the Bible? It's from the Greek word lepros, which comes from the root word lepis, which means scale or scaly. And basically, leprosy, as it's translated in the English, reflects this Greek word lepros. In the Old Testament, you have another Hebrew word that is also translated leprosy that comes from the Hebrew word that means scale or scaly also. So in both cases, it had reference to some kind of a manifest, visible, scaly skin, at least the skin was part of the disease, skin visible disease. A scaly skin disease. It could go much deeper than that, as Leviticus 13 indicates. But that is the term they use. Now, there's a lot of argument and a lot of debate about whether this leprosy, as it's called, and the Old Testament leprosy was the same as we know today, which is called Hansen's disease, which is the leprosy that we know about. There's a lot of people who argue about the words that are used and is it or isn't it the same as that kind of leprosy. Well, we can't be sure because over the period of the centuries, diseases may take on new forms for whatever reasons, people building up immunities or for whatever happens in human society and whatever particular germs exist and bacteria and so forth. Diseases can take different forms. Some can be eliminated altogether. And so we don't really know if it was exactly the same. But it seems best to assume from the description of Leviticus 13, which we'll see in a moment, that it was extremely similar. And the only real comparison that we can draw to whatever this disease was will come from our understanding of the disease of leprosy. And throughout the history of study of these things, most people have drawn that parallel, and so I'll continue to do that as we look at it. The horrible disease found its way into the children of Israel's life. This disease, leprosy, as it's called in the Bible, was no doubt picked up in Egypt. Most of the classic writers feel that leprosy originated in Egypt. And by the way, it is caused, they now know in medical science, by a bacillus or a bacteria called Mycobacterium leprae. And this disease has been found in at least one mummy that's been uncovered in Egypt. And it's manifest on the physical body because of the mummification that this particular person did have leprosy. So we know it stretches way back into ancient times. This disease then, of course, as the children of Israel were in the land of Egypt, was transmitted to them. And when they came into the promised land, they carried this disease with them. Now, it was a problem because of the horror of the disease itself. And so God, as He built in many laws to the life of Israel to protect them from plagues and things, gave them laws to deal with leprosy so they would not contract this disease. Now, modern-day leprosy is only really communicable to less than 10% of the people. In other words, 90% plus of people in our day-to-day cannot get leprosy even if you got all of the bacilli in you because it's just the way we're made today. We don't know whether the disease then was more communicable. There is a statement made in Luke 4:27 that there were many lepers in Israel of whom only Naaman was cleansed. So it may have been highly communicable then when it's less communicable today. So in Israel came this disease, and God, wanting to protect them, gave them a very clear direction as to how to treat it. I'm going to read from the 13th chapter of Leviticus. I'll read out of the NAS because it clarifies some of the terms. You can listen or you can look at it if you have that version. But I'm going to read some lengthy passages here just to point it out. You'll find it fascinating how God directed them. The Lord spoke to Moses, Leviticus 13:1, and Aaron, saying, "When a man has on the skin of his body a swelling or a rash," that's a better word than scab, "a rash or a bright spot, and it becomes an infection of leprosy on the skin of his body, then he shall be brought to Aaron the priest or one of the sons of the priest." In other words, anybody who gets leprosy, bring him in to the priest. "And the priest shall look at the mark on the skin of the body, and if the hair in the infection has turned white, and if the infection appears to be deeper than just the skin," in other words, it's more than a superficial skin disease, as indicated by the hair turning white down from the roots being infected, and if it looks to be deeper, it is then an infection of leprosy, and the priest shall look at him and pronounce him unclean. But if the bright spot is white on the skin of his body and doesn't appear to be deeper than the skin, and the hair on it is not turned white, the priest shall isolate him who has the infection for 7 days. This is just to keep him isolated, to give him the test to watch what happens. The priest look at him on the seventh day, and if in his eyes the infection has not changed, the infection has not spread, then the priest shall isolate him for 7 more days, 2 weeks. The priest shall look at him again on the seventh day, and if the infection has faded and the mark has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. It's only a rash. And that could stand for psoriasis, eczema, what's called vitiligo, lots of things. Just not a serious thing. But if the rash spreads farther on the skin, after he's shown himself to the priest for the cleansing, he shall appear again to the priest. The priest shall look, and if the rash spread on the skin, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It's leprosy. It keeps getting worse. Now, there were some obvious cases where you didn't really need a 2-week test. And in verse 9, he talks about them. When the infection of leprosy is on a man, then he shall be brought to the priest. The priest shall look, and if there's a white swelling in the skin, and it has turned the hair white, and there is raw flesh, then it's chronic leprosy, and the priest shall pronounce him clean, and don't bother to isolate him for a week because it's already very clear what he's got. If the leprosy breaks out further on the skin, and the leprosy covers all the skin of him who has the infection from his head even to his feet, as far as the priest can see, then the priest shall look, and behold, if this skin disease or leprosy has covered all his body, he shall pronounce him clean. If it's all turned white, in other words, if all he does is get a white thing all over him and it doesn't break out in oozing open raw sores, then it isn't the leprosy that's serious. In other words, if all he got was this stuff all over him of a very limited nature, just a turning white or a patchy pale color, then it wasn't the real thing. And you could pronounce him okay. In fact, if you look at leprosy today, and it could refer to this here, there are two kinds. There's one called leprotomus, which is severe serious, and then there's called tuberculoid leprosy, which is a harmless kind that just turns the skin patchy and is gone in 1 to 3 years. So, these are the tests that were given, and they had to be examined very carefully. Now, if he's got the severe kind, the rest of the 13th chapter deals with it. What do you do with this person? Well, verse 38. When a man or woman has bright spots in the skin of the body and white bright spots, priests look, and if the bright spots on the skin of their bodies are a faint white, if it's just a faint white thing all over them, it's eczema. That's the way they translate that Hebrew word, just something less than the serious disease. He's clean. Now, if he loses the hair of his head, he's bald, but he's clean. Some of you are sighing, a great sigh. But if on the bald head or the bald forehead there occurs a reddish-white infection and the leprosy breaks out on the bald head and you look at him and it swells and so forth, then it's leprous. In other words, another examination. Now verse 45 is the key. As for the leper who has the infection, his clothes shall be torn, the hair of his head shall be uncovered, and he shall cover his mustache, that is his mouth, and cry unclean, unclean. Leprosy is passed when it is inhaled through the air. It comes from the mouth into the mouth. That's one way it is passed, and that's why when he goes around, he covers his mouth. Also, they found that people have contracted leprosy when they have both touched the same object. So they had to take his garments and do away with those as well. And then he spends the rest of his life going around with all his face covered saying, unclean, unclean. He has to make an announcement everywhere he goes. So nobody will get near him. The Talmud said you can't get any closer than 6 foot to a leper, and if there's a wind blowing, 150 feet is the limit. And there were 61 defilements in Judaism. Number one defilement, top of the list, was a dead body, and number two was a leper. Didn't go near him. Didn't touch him. Now, serious leprosy, folks, is a terrible, terrible, terrible disease. In the first place, we can sort of control it today, so people can live a sort of a normal life. But in those times, it would be utterly uncontrolled. The first thing that leprosy does, it attacks, apart from its physical symptoms, what you see, the patchiness and so forth, it attacks the nervous system and immediately anesthetizes the limbs. People say, well, their noses just fall off and their fingers fall off. Not really. Part of the problem is when they lose all their feeling, they literally rub their extremities off. It attacks the eyes and brings blindness, the teeth, and they fall out. It attacks the internal organs so that sterility occurs. Frankly, it's not that painful. It's just the most ugly thing imaginable. in the world. It starts with a white or pink patch on the brow, the ear, the nose, the chin, or the cheek. And then it begins to spread and becomes spongy, tumorous, bulbous swellings all over the face. Then it becomes systemic, and that's when it begins to come into the liver and the bone marrow, the blood supply. You lose your feeling, blindness. This disease was feared, horrifying. And whether or not it could attack the total population or only a few, it was enough to want them to be out of the camp, just to protect the people. They have to go out of the camp. In 2 Samuel 3:29, there's an amazing statement. David was pronouncing a curse on evil Joab. And David said, "May his family never be without a leper." That is the worst thing you could say about someone. And the disease had no cure.
That's John MacArthur explaining what sets Jesus apart from, well, every other man or woman who's walked the earth. The miraculous ability to heal is just one unforgettable aspect of the amazing power of Jesus. By the way, that's the title of the series that John started today here on Grace to You. Well, even though we've just started laying the groundwork for the study, it's possible that you've already seen a side of Jesus that you've never considered. To get all that you can out of the Amazing Power of Jesus series, you can download each of the messages from our website and dig into it at your own pace, or order the entire 10-CD album. Do that when you contact us today. The 10-CD album is reasonably priced. Shipping is free. You can order the CDs right now by phone. Dial 1-800-55-GRACE. Or place your order at the website gty.org. Now, if you'd like those 10 MP3 files for the same series, The Amazing Power of Jesus, each is available free at gty.org. In fact, virtually all of John's messages, about 3,000 total, are free at the website. Any message you hear on the radio, as well as those we haven't aired, are available free at MP3 at gty.org. Let me take the opportunity today to say thanks, friend, for remembering that Grace to You is heard on hundreds of stations like this one, reaching millions of spiritually hungry men and women, both in English and Spanish, because listeners like you support us financially. So if you've benefited from John MacArthur's teaching and want to help us get that same teaching out to others, please write today, Grace to You, Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412, or call 1-800-55-GRACE. And now, for John MacArthur and the staff, I'm your host, Carl Miller, thanking you for tuning in today, reminding you that John is here again tomorrow for another 30 minutes of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You. Most documentaries on the so-called historical Jesus give you a picture of Jesus that is, well, far from the awe-inspiring, powerful person that John MacArthur will show you tomorrow, right here on the next Grace to You.